Who asked him to come here, the son of a cat mistress? He is so crooked that he spies in the interests of the enemy against those on whose support he has grown up. Call him out of the palace immediately and leave him only with his breath. Purport. When getting married, the Kshatriya kings would take on several other youthful girls along with the married princess. These girl attendants of the king were known as dasis, or attendant mistresses. By intimate association with the king, the dasis would get sons. Such sons were called dasiputras. They had no claim to a royal position, but they would get maintenance and other facilities just like princes. Vidura was the son of such a dasi, and he was thus not counted among the Kshatriyas. King Dhritarashtra was very affectionate toward his younger Dasiputra brother, Vidura, and Vidura was a great friend and philosophical advisor to Dhritarashtra. Duryodhana knew very well that Vidura was a great soul and well-wisher, but unfortunately he used strong words to hurt his innocent uncle. Duryodhana not only attacked Vidura's birth, but also called him an infidel because he seemed to support the cause of Yudhishthira, who Duryodhana considered his enemy. He desired that Vidura be immediately put out of the palace and deprived of all his possessions. If possible, he would like to have him caned until he was left with nothing but his breath. He charged that Vidura was the spy of the Pandavas because he advised King Dhritarashtra in their favor. Such is the situation of palace life and the intricacies of diplomacy that even a faultless person like Vidura could be charged with something abominable and punished. Vidura was struck with wonder at such unexpected behavior from his nephew Duryodhana, and before anything actually happened, he decided to leave the palace for good. Text 16. Swayam Danura Dvari Nidayamayam Pratu paro marmasu taditopi saitam at yubana karna banar katavyato yad uru manayana. Thus being pierced by arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. Purport. A pure devotee of the Lord is never perturbed by such an awkward position created by the external energy of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 3.27, it is stated, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manite. A conditioned soul is absorbed in material existence under the influence of different modes of external energy. Absorbed in the false ego, he thinks that he is doing everything by himself. The external energy of the Lord, the material nature, is fully under the control of the Supreme Lord, and the conditioned soul is fully under the grip of the external energy. Therefore, the conditioned soul is fully under the control of the law of the Lord, but due to illusion only, he thinks himself independent in his activities. Duryodhana was acting under the influence of the external nature by which he could be vanquished at the ultimate end. He could not accept the sound advice of Vidura, but on the contrary, he insulted that great soul who was the well-wisher of his whole family. Vidura could understand this because he was a pure devotee of the Lord. In spite of being very strongly insulted by Duryodhana's words, Vidura could see that Duryodhana, under the influence of Maya, the external energy, was making progress on the path toward his own ruination. He therefore considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. Yet he also saw how the internal energy of the Lord helped him in that particular situation. A devotee is always in a renounced temperament because the worldly attractions can never satisfy him. Vidura was never attracted by the royal palace of his brother. He was always ready to leave the palace and devote himself completely to the transcendent loving service of the Lord. Now he got the opportunity by the grace of Duryodhana, and instead of being sorry at the strong words of insult, he thanked him from within because it gave him the chance to live alone in a holy place and fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. The word gatavyata, without being sorry, is significant here because Vidura was relieved from the tribulations which trouble every man entangled in material activities. He therefore thought that there was no need to defend his brother with his bow because his brother was meant for ruination. Thus he left the palace before Duryodhana could act. Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaya Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminte Namane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskyatya Devasatarne. Vidura gave good advice, but immediately Duryodhana wanted him to be thrown out of the palace. From one point of view, it's an exciting narration. The Mahabharata is full of such stories of political intrigues, romances, catastrophes, fights, wars, calamities, etc. And it makes for interesting reading from our point of view. But there's another more deeper meaning. For instance, in the Mahabharata, we find there are many, many stories. The Mahabharata that we usually get is just a summary of the actual Mahabharata. And the Mahabharata, if one reads the complete Mahabharata, one will see that the stories are meant to teach morality. They're not just some interesting stories so that you can read them before you sleep at night. But they're meant for instruction to bring people to the human form of life. The human form of life actually begins when one comes to the Brahminical platform. Then one actually becomes humane. Obviously, we can see here that these kshatriyas are not very humane. Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, although they're the son, Dhritarashtra was the son of Vyasadeva, one of the principal devotees in our disciple succession. And although he's certainly trained up in the kshatriya duties, but he was indifferent to killing his relatives, the Pandavas. That's not very humane. If your uncle is always trying to kill you, you'd probably take him to court and try and sue him for abuse. But of course, here, the court is run by Dhritarashtra, therefore the Pandavas were not very likely to win. In any case, their cousins were trying to kill them, their nephews were trying to kill them, and Bhishma, Duryodhana, and other great personalities, Dronacharya, for instance, they did not even try to help the Pandavas in many ways. So the Kshatriyas, they're not quite on the human form of life yet. Although compared to us, they're quite elevated. Because unless one is aware of the difference between matter and spirit, to a great extent, one can't have that fighting enthusiasm. One can't go on a battlefield with full enthusiasm and fight to kill the other party, knowing well that one may be killed oneself. We can imagine nowadays there are so many battlefields and they're firing cannons and machine guns. But there they were throwing mountains at each other. They were throwing cyclones and hurricanes. In one part of the Battle of Kurukshetra, there's a weapon that was firing unlimited arrows at everywhere. So obviously you don't go on a battlefield like that unless you have some fearlessness. Saryam teja jiti daksha yude chapi palayanam Dhanam Ishvara Bhavascha Kshatra Karma Subhavaja. To be a factual administrator or Kshatriya in the Vedic culture, one has to have certain qualities. It's not by hook or crook. One gets elected to some post and spends the rest of the time trying to cheat the people out of their taxes. And if there's a war that goes on, one immediately enters into the shelter 3 miles underneath the earth and watches the whole thing on television while one is drinking coffee. That is not actual Kshatriya. But even persons who were trained and had such a high consciousness, they were not even considered to be on a human form of life platform. Actual human form of life begins when developing the good qualities. Sama dhamma tapaso jam shanti arjumam eva cha jnanam vijnanam asti jnanam brahma karma sabhavaja. Peacefulness, sense of mind control, cleanliness, austerity, theoretical and applied knowledge and religiosity. That these qualities make one actually human. A gentleman. Therefore, we cannot consider Duryodhana or many of the other Kshatriyas, unless they were Rajarshi, like Maharaj Yudhisthira and the Pandavas. They were not only Kshatriyas, but they are also great Rishis. Also, of course, Dronacharya was a great personality, he was a Brahmin, and Bhishma Dev. But sometimes they did not manifest these qualities because of their particular duties. But here it says, from a devotee point of view, from a higher perspective, the whole thing is just a play. The Kshatriyas more or less saw as a play also, like a game. You can imagine they went on the battlefield and it was a game they were about to take part in. Because they knew that even if they died, they were not going to die. Only the body was going to die. And the worst that was going to happen to them, as Krishna said, Yadricha labashantu sto dvanvatito mimatsaraha. Actually, that's wrong. So dharma pita veksham navi kampitu marhasi dharmani unyachchayan yach kshatriya shavidnavidyate Yadricha chopapanam swargam dvaram paritam sukina kshatriya parta labhate yudam idrisham. Happy the Kshatriyas, O Arjuna, to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them the doors of the heavenly planets. Considering your specific duties as a Kshatriya, you should not hesitate to fight on religious principles. Because a Kshatriya knows if I die in this religious war, then the worst that's going to happen to me is I'll go to heaven, which is not bad for a Kshatriya. And if I win, then I get the whole kingdom. And I can enjoy here, I'll enjoy there. But the Kshatriyas, they're in the mode of passion, they want to enjoy. And if they follow their duty, their dharma, that's what they do. They get to enjoy in so many different ways. Then by such enjoyment, gradually they'll come to realize by actually the important part is the duty, not the enjoyment. They'll give up the enjoyment. And when they become completely dutiful, then they come to the mode of goodness. There's always a link. They're dutiful, but they want to enjoy. A Vaishya is so a little bit dutiful, not so dutiful as a Kshatriya, and they want economic development, so in the future they can enjoy. And the Shudras, they just want to enjoy. Their sense of duty is very minimal. They have no intelligence to understand anything higher. Then they have to follow duty or else they'll get the stick. And less than a Shudra, they have no sense of duty, they only want to enjoy. And even if they get the stick, they still try to enjoy anyhow. Just like one man was on the railroad tracks of Howrah Station in Calcutta. If you go there, you'll see many people on these tracks are looking around for everything that people throw out in the trains to see if they can find some cigarette butts. So he's looking for some cigarette butts or something, and a train came and ran over him, cut his body in half. So one of the devotees, out of compassion, went up to him and said, "Can I get you something? Can I do something for you?" So the man said, "Do you have a cigarette?" So even he's about to leave his body, he still wants to enjoy up to the last moment. So this is the nature of Shudra. But Brahman means only duty, not caring whether it is happiness or distress. One simply carries out one's duty. And the aim is higher consciousness, ultimately to obtain Brahman or to obtain Krishna consciousness. Vidura was such a great personality because he understood that everything is simply a transformation here of the three modes of nature. And that apparently there are individual doers, but ultimately everything is controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That even Duryodhana seemed to be throwing him out of the palace, but he understood that was for a higher purpose, that Krishna was behind it, giving him an opportunity to absorb his mind in Krishna consciousness. Pariksha Maharaj, when he was cursed by the Brahmin boy Sringhi, did not go and start lamenting, "Oh, you know, I had such a nice kingdom, it was growing, everything was going all right, I finally had, you know, nice relations with my wife, and the kids were, you know, were doing all right, and this boy cursed me. Why? Is there a God? If there was a God, how could this happen? What did I do? Just a little snake around someone's neck. It wasn't a bad snake, it was dead." No, he immediately understood that this is Krishna's arrangement for some higher purpose. And he accepted it enthusiastically and went to the bank of the Ganges, sat down in meditation, heard Srimad Bhagavatam. A materialist would lament, "Oh, he had such a nice opportunity to enjoy the kingdom, and then he wound up hearing stories at the end of his life." No, he actually gave up the inferior consciousness, the inferior existence, and came to the level of spiritual, pure existence where everything is pleasurable. That to gain the material energy, to gain a palace or a great kingdom, to gain material opulence, is not really a gain. Because it is simply earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, transformed in so many different varieties that sometimes for some people seem attractive and for other people seem very unattractive. It is simply a product of the illusory energy, or is simply the influence of the illusory energy that sometimes we think something's very nice and something not so nice. But actually in the material world, nothing is nice here, because the very material existence is not nice. But because we're attached to this illusion of imagining ourselves to be the enjoyers and the controllers, therefore we're given some opportunity to participate in illusory existence. But the sooner we get out of the illusory existence, the better it is for ourselves and for everyone else. This opportunity that Vidura was given was an opportunity to concentrate his mind on Krishna rather than having to get absorbed in the intricacies and the intrigues of the palace. As soon as there is money, then immediately everyone wants their share. As soon as there is opulence, everyone's trying to figure out how I can get some of it. That's the nature of material existence. Sanatana Goswami, he was a great minister in the Nawab Hussein Shah's government, along with his brother Rupa Goswami and Anupam. But they renounced everything. Rupa Goswami left with a boatful of gold coins, and he deposited some of those gold coins with a banker, which Sanatana Goswami later on had to use that money of his brother in order to get free from the prison that the Nawab Hussein Shah had put him into. And on his way out of the prison, he gave the jailkeeper so many gold coins. And he was left with, well, he didn't know he was left with anything. He just left. But his servant, Ishan, took 8 gold coins with him. And when he was traveling, he came to an inn. And when he came to the inn, then the innkeeper, he had a palmist there. He looked at the palm, Sanatana Goswami's palm. Anyone who walked in, he looked at their palm. And he figured out this man has 8 gold coins with him. So that's a good promise. We saw someone's hand, we could probably hardly count it. He had 5 fingers on the hand, but to speak of 8 gold coins in his pocket. And so the hotel keeper started to treat Sanatana Goswami very nicely, giving him grains to cook with, giving him a nice room, some water, a servant. Sanatana Goswami, being a minister, quite conversant with diplomacy, thought, I am a poverty-stricken beggar, wandering mendicant. I approach this hotel keeper. He wants to give me so much gifts and grains and nice place to stay and servants. He must have some ulterior motive. So he asked his servant, Ishan, are you carrying anything with you? So he said, yes, I have 7 gold coins. Sanatana Goswami took the 7 gold coins, presented them before the hotel keeper, and said, here, take these. The hotel keeper said, no, you can keep them. Actually, I was going to kill you and take your 8 gold coins. But you can keep them. Sanatana Goswami said, no, you keep them. Because if I keep them, someone else will try and kill me for them. And then he went to his servant and said, Ishan, you have 1 gold. I think you have something left over you forgot about. So Ishan said, yes, I have 1 gold coin left. Sanatana Goswami said, you take the gold coin and go home. And then Sanatana Goswami, without any gold coins, went over the hilly track to see to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And on the way he met his brother, Shikanta, who presented him with a beautiful new blanket. And of course, later on, we know that when Lord Chaitanya saw that blanket, he kept on looking at the blanket because Sanatana Goswami was supposed to be a renunciate, yet he had this beautiful blanket. And so Sanatana Goswami realized that Lord Chaitanya does not approve of my blanket, and he exchanged it for a torn quilt. And then he felt completely free from all anxiety. Now in the material world, when we think we have something, then we're always in anxiety we're going to lose it. And ultimately we will lose it, because we'll lose the very source of our anxiety, namely this body. Because of our deep love and affection for our body, therefore we're always in anxiety. Because we're wondering what's going to happen to my body. But everyone knows what's going to happen to their body. We hear about it all the time, that our body is going to die. Of course, don't want to be pessimistic in a class. You're supposed to enliven everyone. But that's a fact. The body is going to die. But the good news is that we're not going to die. The bad news is that we think we're going to die. And the good news is that we can get out of this illusion if we absorb our consciousness in Krishna. There's no other way of doing it. Therefore, any circumstance where it helps us absorb the mind in Krishna more, that's favorable. But that doesn't mean that everyone has to give up whatever they have and go to a holy place and try and sit there and think about Krishna. Because if we did that at a certain stage, then we'd simply sit there and think about all the things I gave up. And we wouldn't think about Krishna. In the beginning stage, one has to utilize all his energies in Krishna's service. And in that way, everything will be revealed that it is Krishna's energy. It's not just a theory that out of my good nature, out of my kindness, I'm giving something to Krishna. No, it is Krishna's already. Out of Krishna's kindness, he's allowing us to utilize his things in his service, the things that we've acquired, due to our tendency to usurp his kingdom before, we're allowed to utilize that in his service and get out over our illusion that these things belong to us, or that we have something to gain here in the material world. And when we overcome that illusion, then we become qualified simply to concentrate our minds upon Krishna and become completely self-satisfied. So that anywhere and everywhere under all circumstances, we always feel blissful in association with Krishna and our full consciousness of Krishna, seeing everyone and everything in relation to Krishna, and always remembering Krishna's wonderful pastimes, both here in the material world and in the spiritual realm, the internal energy. So Vidura was such a personality. He had not at all lamented over his so-called loss of his kingdom, but he became quite joyful because he knew he was gaining a much greater kingdom, Krishna's kingdom. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Saint Vidura, I noticed he was still hurt by the words of Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra, I mean. And it seems that as we go...
Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana.
Duryodhana. So he was still hurt, said that his heart was pierced, and it's obviously had some feelings and he was upset, etc. Now, we're not on the level of spiritual advancement or social, our social responsibilities are such that we just can't walk out. So how does one deal with being hurt as one goes about
tolerate.
Tolerate.
Yes, tolerate. And try not to become disturbed. We don't see Vidura took up his bow, smashed Duryodhana a few times, and walked out. You rascal. No, he's hurt out of affection because he was equally kind to Duryodhana. We think Duryodhana, he should have, you know, he didn't like Duryodhana, or no, he was equally kind to Duryodhana. This is the inconceivable nature of a pure devotee. That even his so-called enemy, he doesn't see as his enemy. Because he sees within Duryodhana, he sees his soul, the eternal servant of Krishna, and he feels himself to be the servant of all of Krishna's servants, even his so-called enemy.
What if being tolerant is not enough?
Well, then pick up a bow and hit him a couple of times. Well, I think if you hit Duryodhana, he's not a Vaishnava. But if you're
a personal movement, it's communication, and all this sort of thing, and just to be tolerant, it seems to me that's kind of like a shutdown reflex.
Is it?
It seems to be.
Well, if we're tolerant to knowledge, then that's real tolerance. If we're tolerant to ignorance, that's a different thing. If we see things, instead of becoming a servant of the impulses born of the modes of nature, thinking, I must serve the modes of nature that arise with my heart, or else it's not proper. No, one who's in knowledge thinks that these are just the modes of nature washing over me. If I serve them, I'll simply get more involved in the material nature. And if I become aloof from them and take shelter of Krishna, then these will become purified, and this tendency to become affected by the modes of material nature will disappear. So we take shelter of what Krishna wants us to do. We take shelter of the Super Soul and his representatives, and not become influenced by the modes of material nature, then we make spiritual progress. Then it's a worthwhile activity. And if we serve the modes of nature, then neither will be benefited nor will we accomplish anything valuable. Anything else? Yes. Being what?
Being an Australian, Indian,
yeah.
Being part of the country. I was just thinking, like, sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say, seemingly he was kind of proud of being like a Calcutta boy. Like, you know, he identified to some degree with being from that place. And so I was just wondering, how do we see that in the field where he has those feelings personally? How do we have a balance?
Well, I never heard Prabhupada say he was proud of being a Calcutta boy. He said something like he was wise, streetwise, because he was a Calcutta boy. In other words, we have two natures. One of them is the external nature, the experience. We could say the experience. Prabhupada used a lot of his experience within this world to demonstrate different things. And on the other hand, we have our internal nature, which is spiritual. Now the difference is that an ordinary person who is conditioned by the modes of material nature their experience is also a product of the modes of nature. They see things according to their conditioned life. Now, a pure devotee, one who's actually elevated to the transcendental platform, he has experience within the material world, but is seen from the spiritual point of view. It's not ordinary experience. So Prabhupada may have said, I was a Calcutta boy, because if one is a pure devotee, one will also see what's going on externally in this material world, how the modes of material nature work, but one will see properly how they work. Therefore, his experience as a Calcutta boy was not an ordinary experience. It was a experience of a person who was fully conscious of both how the world works and how the spiritual energy works. So Prabhupada often used his experience. As a matter of fact, he only had a... If you listen to Prabhupada's tapes, when we listen to them, we'll find that Prabhupada only uses a few examples over and over and over again. Because, more or less, the material world is not as variegated as we think it is. There's just a few things going on. And they just happen again and again. And so Prabhupada could utilize his experience and demonstrate so many other things. There's a science of, it's almost like Tai Chi or something. They have like, I think, 108 varieties of possibilities that can happen in the world. That's it. Just like 108. And everything else is just like a variation of that. And then you just give you a little story and they fit into the 108 and they can figure out what's going to happen after that. Anything else? Yes. No, everyone has to become a Brahmin. Everyone has to. Externally, one may remain in a certain occupation, but the consciousness, if we want to become purified, we have to come to the Brahminical platform. As far as the people in general, Prabhupada didn't expect that everyone's going to fully take to the Sankirtan movement. Therefore, when our movement becomes powerful enough, then we'll also establish Vana and Ashram to help people who won't directly take to the path, take to the indirect path to come up to the Brahminical consciousness. But everyone has to make progress towards that goal, or else then we'll sink down to the lower stages of life. Yeah, sure. Yeah, of course. That's what we're doing. We're supposed to think of Krishna. That's the highest platform of self-realization. Anything else? Jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.